interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday. Close out the month of April edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D for the next 2 hours and 5 minutes. Thank you, Astros. We got you from inside the 237 Roof Studios. Remember, no job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. Pardon the absence yesterday. Had to tidy some things up. Back at it today. Ready to start and go all in on the Saints' draft efforts. Couple of trade-ups in rounds where we thought maybe they had a chance to double down and get multiple picks. They just solidified where they were in those rounds, and they might have just fortified the deepest roster in the league. I'll share my thoughts on the Saints. I'll lead off as well. Split screen, if you will. Saints on the left, on the right. We're going to get to LSU recruiting at a clip that maybe we haven't seen since Y2K, or at a minimum, I would say since 2011, when Odell, Jarvis, Lyle Collins, and so many talented players came through the turnstiles. You want to get in? I've got some time. Missed you on a Monday? Holler at me on this Tuesday. 706-0111. I'm going to go through all five picks that the Saints made, and I'll give you my exact notes on all of these guys. Eric McCoy, let's start with the 48th overall pick in the second round. I take note of the fact that he's a three-year starter in the SEC. I take note of the fact that he hardly ever gave up a sack that came from the interior when blocking opposition for Texas A&M. I take note of the fact that this is a guy who comes in and, well, they thought he might go higher than he did. So the Saints, again, know how to go out and get great value. But the biggest thing I'll tell you is this. Between Nick Easton, snatched up in the offseason from the Vikings, Will Clapp, Cameron Tom, each with South Louisiana roots, and now Eric McCoy, hell, just keep throwing things against the wall eventually until you see what sticks. Get as much volume as you can and see what sticks, .. But it better be Eric McCoy. I think you're in a little bit of trouble if McCoy is not your starting center next year for any reason other than injury, and even if he does get dinged up and that precludes him from being in the front five, the Saints are going to have some problems in that direction. I don't think Easton gives you enough security with what he did in his career in Minnesota. That's my opinion. I'm not sure that Cameron Tom is ready. I get the sense Will Clapp may be a little bit higher on the ladder than Tom, but is he ready to fill the shoes of a guy in Max Unger that was as valuable as anyone on the offensive line for the last two or three seasons? I'm not sure about that either. I really like the pick of Eric McCoy. He better be the starting center. Let's get to the guy they took in round four, 105th overall, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. There is a chance that this becomes a more impactful pick than McCoy. I like somebody who has subset packages written all over him in the modern-day NFL. With Gardner-Johnson, look, the former Florida Gator isn't going to be somebody that you sit in center field and say, don't let anybody pass this in the back line of defense. They're going to play him man-to-man defense, guarding interior slot receivers. He'll be off the ball as a deep safety as well, but I think he has a real big opportunity as an in-box defender. And so the Saints bolstered their second level last year, right? We all know that. I think Demario Davis was as big an acquisition as the Saints have had in the last half decade as a free agent. Gardner Johnson is somebody that could be a fusion of a second and third level player. I love what he brings. And at some point, he was seen as maybe a late first, early second round guy. Like his ball instincts. Like even more the fact that he can play physical. They need McCoy more because of the position. But wow, do I think Gardner Johnson has a chance to be an absolute steal. I don't know about AK-41 in the third round degree of steal. but maybe not too many rungs below on the ladder. We'll go to the sixth-round pick, Saquon Hampton, safety out of Rutgers. Different type of safety than Gardner Johnson. I don't mind the pick. All right, it's surprising that they went back-to-back with safeties, but the reality, I think, for Hampton is as follows. If he is not seen as a special teams dynamo, he's got a little shot at making the roster, in my opinion. I'll go to round seven. Saints selected twice in the final round. Alizé Mack, sweet name. They took him at 231st overall. Sweet pedigree. Notre Dame tight ends have had some success coming into the league. And I think it's most interesting that Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and Sean Payton, they went in a similar mold to Jared Cook. They didn't go with somebody who's tried, true, tested as a run blocker. They went out and got another pass-catching tight end. And so maybe this is a compromise to not taking a wide receiver in the draft. I'm always going to defer, especially to Jeff Ireland, Sean Payton. These guys know what they're doing. They must feel like they're okay, or they don't want to address run blocking as far as the tight end. Heck, for all I know, they think that number seven fits that bill perfectly, and they get all they need out of Taysom Hill there. But they really haven't backfilled, in my opinion, for maybe at least a part of who Ben Watson was. If you think that Dan Arnold, Josh Hill, Mawa Mua not going to work here anymore, if you think all those guys are your run-blocking tight ends, fine, if that's all you need. But I wonder if Alizé Mack has a chance to stick on this roster. He's going to have to show maybe a little bit more attention to detail and focus at times than his track record at Notre Dame suggests. Finally, Caden Ellis, linebacker out of Idaho. Either you're a special teams ace or you're not. And this guy's the son of a former first-round selection, a Pro Bowler. The Lions had Luther Ellis back in the day. And so even though they're dipping down to the lower levels at Idaho, they're getting somebody who was highly productive. Kind of hard for me to see him fitting. So the Saints drafted five times. If three of these guys make the roster, it will have been a very good draft. I'm excited about McCoy. I might be even more excited about Gardner Johnson. They don't need the position quite as much, but I think we can all agree. Can you ever have too many versatile second/third level hybrid defenders? I would say in the modern NFL, the answer is no. You want to go in on the Saints, their draft? Want to chop it up? We got a little more time in this segment. 706-0111. The other not-so-insignificant thing that's happened since last we spoke at Ruffino's on the River Friday, LSU has leapt up to the number one recruiting class in the country for 2020. And Shea Dixon, oh yeah, he'll be with us at 5. More on that in a moment. But Shea Dixon tweeted out recently, at 8:15 Sunday night, Alabama snatched up a commit. They were the number one class. I think at 8:51, LSU hauled in Antoine Sampa, number two inside linebacker in the country out of Woodbridge, Virginia. And in a span of 36 minutes, Ed Orgeron and LSU pulled a Lee Corso. Not so fast, my friend. Give me that. And now LSU is the number one class in the country. We'll see how long it sticks. My impressions are these. They're a little bit heavy in certain areas. Wide receiver is the most obvious, right? I mean, not only here in our backyard in the Barry, they've gone out to California. They went out to D.C. with Rakeem Jarrett, the number three wideout in the country. And don't worry, Shea's going to give you a full rundown of these guys, who deserves the credit on the staff, where they go next, all those things at 5 o'clock. But what LSU's doing, becoming more of a national brand and pulling from the West Coast, pulling from the East Coast, still maintaining roots where you need them in Louisiana and Texas, damn impressive. Can they keep up the number one pace? I think they can. And it's because of the national footprint. It's because of the fact that they're able to dominate in areas where they always weren't as strong. Now, I do think there's a couple of places where they're going to have to solidify. Offensive line jumps off the page at me. They've got time to get there. They're 14 commits in, and some analysts are saying this is as good as LSU's been on the recruiting trail in a long time. I'll get Shea to quantify that in less than an hour. All right, I've teased that a few times. How about our full guest list today? It's great to be back with you on a Tuesday. Fired up today and excited to bring my friend Gus Kattengill aboard on the other side. It's our first of two trips to the Big Easy today. So Gus, he'll give us the reaction. He hosts Sports Talk in NOLA from noon to 3 p.m. So for the last 6 hours of his show, What have people been saying about the Saints draft? And when are we going to get the NFL draft in New Orleans? What might be blocking that possibility? Gus Kattengill, he'll answer those questions, give you the latest. Our only scheduled guest of hour number one, he'll be on the other side of this break. Shay Dixon, you get a double dose of our good friend from Go247.com. 5:05 today. Very extended run on recruiting. And then we'll also talk about next year's crop of NFL draftees from LSU. You might be surprised where one CBS sports analyst has Grant Delpit in the pecking order. And at 5:45, just about at the end of today's show, we'll go back to the Crescent City, Sharif Aishak, WDSU TV. Just getting fired up, cranked up, and started on a Tuesday. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we will return on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
We felt strongly that he wouldn't make it to 62. That was one thing, and that we didn't think he would be there at that time.
There you have it. Sean Payton on why they had to make a move to snatch up Eric McCoy out of Texas A&M. We'll talk about that draft pick and more in this interview. Bumper to Bumper Sports returns on 103.7 The Game, and we're heading out to New Orleans. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, great to bring back Gus Kattengill, host of the Sports Hangover on ESPN Radio New Orleans. Gus, how are you today?
What's going on, Ben? How you doing, man?
Look, life is good here. What's your 6 hours of radio since the NFL draft came and went? What's it been like specifically pertaining to Eric McCoy and going to get a Texas A&M center in the second round?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we're doing the draft special from Hooters on Friday, and we're sitting there, and it was just funny to kind of get the reaction, you know, Saints trade up, everyone's oohing and aahing, and, you know, where are they going? And, Ben, I'm sure you got it, too, on your show. And, you know, I think it's because you're remembering and thinking of how the Saints ended the season and their offense and their receivers. And, you know, people wanted receivers. I'm like, dude, you got Cameron Meredith, Traquan Smith, Keith Kirkwood. Jared Cook should help that. That is not where that first pick should go. And I said, look, it was a glowing sign. I think what I kept saying on our show, man, was it's a glowing sign that said vacancy when I looked at the offensive line. I mean, it's not sexy. You don't go buy the jerseys of linemen essentially at times, but it just stood out. It just kept standing out to me because I go back to the film study that NFL Live did leading into the postseason and leading into that NFC Championship game and that Saints game against the Rams in the regular season. They showed Drew Brees having 2.7, 2.9 before having to throw the ball, almost a full 3 seconds, green all around him. Then you get into where they were going into the postseason into that game. Drew was down to 1.7, 1.9, getting hit, moving around, Cowboys game, et cetera. That's almost a second, complete second shaved off, man. And unless you have rapport with a lot of those receivers, and people forget Kirkwood, Smith, Meredith, anybody they brought from the practice squad or anybody they tried to sign, whether it would have been Dez Bryant or anybody else, that was their first season with him, you know, not even a complete season. So it just put a lot of stress on it. And I can't express enough, if you don't have a healthy offensive line, it affected them. And Max Unger retires. Andres Pete's into the last year of his deal. Tron Armstead busts him, just has bad luck, man, can't stay healthy. I said the best player available, which is where I thought they were because of their free agency moves, man, had anywhere in the ballpark area rankings-wise with the top offensive guard, center, tackle, guard combo, I would pull the trigger on the offensive lineman. And you listen to Sean, this guy stood out. It just makes a ton of sense.
So I'll ask you this. About midway through last season, it was clear the Saints had one of the best offensive lines in football. Mm-hmm. Was it a big shock why they were one of the best offenses in football? Is that as big a position of strength going into 2019, or do they still have some room to grow?
I think there's still some room to grow from this aspect of it. That, again, there's still some question marks with Andre P. What are you going to do? You're getting down to the position where you're going to have to start making some decisions as to who to pay. And, look, you know, you take a look at, you know, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and what he can play at safety. It was funny, we had Robert Meacham on our show that Friday, and I asked him, so what position do they need to address, you know, on Saturday? He's like, safety. And he thought safety was the pick at 62. He kept bringing up Von Bell. Last year of his deal, is he, you know, he had a nice year last year, but is he that sort of difference maker that you need from a free safety right now? And his point kept being, he's almost a linebacker cover guy hybrid, really, when you look at that you sort of need right now. You remember Harper was at his best, Vaccaro was at his best in run support, right? And trying to cover guys like that. But tight ends being the way they are, slot receivers being used the way they are with these offenses that scheme differently and have a lot of movement, lots of crossing routes and screens, you sort of need somebody that can cover. And dude, I don't know about you, I see that you know, that highlight reel from him. He fits that bill. We had Deuce Windham from The Athletic on 2 days ago, and he said, you know, the thing that stood out was that in the last 2 years at Florida, he was used completely different in each of those two seasons. So it shows versatility. It shows the guy can play off the line of scrimmage. He's physical. When he gets to you, he can hit you and all that. So, again, I thought safety was something that was really interesting that they made to go get those picks and to go do that. So the whole reason I'm bringing that up, Ben, is because you're looking at where some of these offensive linemen are going to be in the future, and you couldn't just look at, hey, is Pete the guy I'm going to pay $9 million for? Is Pete a guy that I can trade if, you know, I get something for that? What if he gets injured? What if Armstead gets injured? So, you know, with Nick Easton, he's an upgrade. No offense to Will Clapp and you know, and Cameron Tom, but he's an upgrade. Okay, he has some experience, so he can play guard center. So I think you have some room to grow still to try to get deeper in case you suffer injuries.
Talking Saints with our man on the ground in New Orleans, Gus Kattengill, host of the Sports Hangover, ESPN Radio in NOLA. All right, let's go a little deeper, if you don't mind, on Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I'm with you. Some of the guys taken later in the draft, if they don't make it via special teams, they're not going to make it at all. But with Gardner-Johnson, he's got a chance to stick defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Von Bell, is there anybody else that he puts a scare into in this roster?
Look, you see the ball skills, right, Ben, to be able to do that. And I think if there was anybody in that rookie class that really had a really good year and season that was probably a disappointment, it probably was Marcus Williams. I didn't think he had a fantastic second year, to be honest with you. And again, maybe that's our fault. Maybe it's the fact that we kept seeing him be an absolute beast in training camp. I mean, it looked like every practice that the Saints had, he had an interception. And we just didn't see that translate into the regular season. I actually almost thought that, then I thought he was trying to overcompensate in the regular season, trying to make too many plays, maybe over-rotating and coveraging. That ball awareness, that just position awareness, really, where he seemed to always be there for the tackle that we saw in his rookie season, I didn't see that a lot last year. I saw him in a lot of trail modes last year, which you didn't see a lot in the first year. He never really seemed to be trailing his rookie year. Last year you saw him underneath a lot of passes that were caught over the top and such. So I don't know if it was him trying to make plays, quote-unquote, rather than to let the play kind of develop and him be there to be the safety. So when you see a guy that can play the run, that can be physical, that can intercept the ball, and if he shows the ability to be able to go different places on defense, he could put that. But all that being said, I think the scare they probably puts is in the slot corner, you know, the nickel corner, because – that's kind of what you sort of need, a guy that can put in that spot. And if you see a run, you can go sniff it out and make a play at the line of scrimmage. You need him to cover, he can go do that as well. So, you know, Patrick Robinson, Ken Crawley, those are the guys that I would probably be concerned about if I'm him. But again, remember, the Saints have used three safety looks. So I that's why that guy really stands out. McCoy makes a ton of sense, that guy's a starting center. But, you know, Gardner-Johnson, man, I don't see how he doesn't wind up, you know, seeing some playing time with a guy like Aaron Glenn and a guy like Dennis Allen. You hear that he's kind of nasty and, you know, kind of very out there, really wants to kind of make plays. I think you could really use a guy like him.
Gus, we'll finish with this. The New Orleans Advocate's got a story on an interesting topic. I'll get your two cents. Why is there a growing feeling that a New Orleans NFL draft is maybe logistically impossible.
Dude, I literally had it. That was a huge thing on my show because I can't understand it for the life of me. I honestly can't. I love Jay Cicero. Him and the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation do a ton of work for this city, and they are the entity that bids on everything. Final Fours, WrestleMania, Super Bowls, convention, you name it. Anything sports-related, women's Final Four, they bid it on. The college football playoff. They're the ones that present to the governing bodies, to the people, to the owners, to get approval. It's them. They put together the package, the PowerPoint, the works. It's them. So when I hear the head of it say, we just can't fit it in, or, you know, it just won't work. It's, as a lifelong New Orleanian, it gets me worked up because I'm like, there we go, typical New Orleans attitude. It just is not going to work. There's too many things at once. But the city twice in its history has hosted a Super Bowl and Mardi Gras at the same time. You know, and it's almost, you know, kind of speaking from both ends in the article, Jay's like, well, we need the hotel rooms, but we really need to depend on the locals. Well, locals aren't staying downtown to go to Jazz Festival, Missouri Classic. They're driving there or Ubering or being dropped off or riding their bike. So the hotel rooms isn't that much of an issue. You've hosted Mardi Gras and things of that nature, like I said, from that. Aside from it, it's in a different area, different venue, and round one is really the beauty of the draft, right? And that's Thursday night. The last act ends at 7 o'clock at Jazz Fest. The Zurich is one on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Of the entire draft and Jazz Fest, only one day is it ever going to coincide at the same time, that Saturday. And most people that are going to Jazz Fest are going to go to Jazz Fest. It's rounds 4 through 7. They'll tune into your show, Ben, or mine to find out who the Saints drafted, right? I mean, am I serious or what? I mean, Thursday and Friday is the bulk of that. Well, Thursday starts at 7, Friday starts at 6. So you can do golf in the day and go to your draft. You can do the Jazz Fest because Friday people leave work early to go to Jazz Fest, and then you can still go check out where the draft is. It makes sense. And here's the thing, guys. We're not asking to do it every year, you know? I mean, we'd be getting it once. Maybe. And that's what I'm getting at. I don't get it. You put your big act in Jazz Fest on Sunday when there's no draft going on. I didn't like hearing in Rod Walker's piece, you know, the head of the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation said, we just can't fit. No, what it is, it screams to me that those two entities and properties, Jazz Fest probably in particular, done one competition, wants to garner the money and the hotel rooms and control that weekend. It is what it is, man. When you try to open a restaurant or a business in the city, you kind of run into the same problem. And that's what I saw and read and felt when I saw that, because it makes no sense. 600,000 in Nashville, man. We consistently have the highest ratings when it comes to watching football in the city. Why not reward your fans? It makes no sense to me.
Gus Kattengill, leading the crusade, helping us fight the good fight. And amigo, we need you to keep doing that. We'll check in with you again soon. Keep up the great work in New Orleans.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Ben.
I like that. A city that literally can push every piece of the puzzle in when it doesn't even fit, but we can't find a way to do Jazz Fest and an NFL draft. You really don't want to see Goodell roasted live in New Orleans. You're out of your mind. We'll be right back. We'll ask you about the Saints when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Iron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Can the callers match those on social media? That, among other things, is what we're about to find out. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. As always, we got to thank Gus Kattengill for hopping aboard. He's our Monday mainstay during the actual football season. Great to get his perspective. Smack dab at the end of April, following up on the Saints draft. Now, I'm going to ask you a question about the Saints draft, where it leaves them. We've seen free agency. We've seen the draft. Where does it leave them going into this upcoming season? Clint posted this question to Facebook about 20, 30 minutes ago. It's getting some really good traction. YP, you people out there in listener land, Get your shots up now. You got 30 minutes to converse. Then we're going to Shea Dixon at 5:05. But I guess before any of that, I got to stop teasing the question. I just got to give you the question. Exciting and new. Your sink or swim question of the day: are the Saints better positioned to win the Super Bowl this season than last? Think on it, then dial 706-0111. CD, I was not a gentleman Friday. I leapt right in front of you. Today you have honors.
I appreciate that, Ben. And I got to say, I got to go swim on this one because I feel like the Saints, it's more the fact that you still got a lot of really powerful weapons at your disposal, especially on the offensive side of the football, and you address a lot of your offseason needs in the draft with a solid center, a safety that you can, some safety depth in Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and maybe Hampton if he winds up showing out during mini camps and also training camp. I think that's going to be a big thing when you're talking about the New Orleans Saints. I'm swimming, not quite like the English Channel, but I'm definitely swimming right now.
This one's difficult for me, and I see both sides of it. I don't mind telling you that. I see where players are entering their prime and have already been all pro caliber, right? I could see where 13 and 41 should only take strides forward. And if that's the case, if Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara are both better than they've been in their, whatever it's been, 2 and 3 years respectively in the league, Katie, bar the freaking door, because they're going to be an unbelievable offense next year. I just don't know if that's going to be the case. I think Thomas will continue to take steps forward. I think Jared Cook alleviates a lot of the stresses he had with doubles. I have a weird feeling that Alvin Kamara is not going to continue taking strides forward without Mark Ingram. I've got a weird feeling. We have a decent sample size of what life without Ingram looks like. The first four games of last year would be a pretty good reference point. Kamara was still special, but without the thunder, the lightning wasn't exactly as effective. Just my two cents. If Latavius Murray can show up and show out and stay healthy, if Jared Cook is the offensive equivalent of what Demario Davis was last year, then yes, the Saints are better equipped to win the Super Bowl this year from a roster's personnel standpoint. But there are some ifs there. I'm having a difficult time definitively saying swim here. Forget about the refs screwing people over. Forget about strength of schedule. Forget about any of that. If I'm just looking at the roster, I think they're about dead even with where they were last year. They might even lag a little bit behind as far as complementary pieces. That said, perspective is needed with my answer here. I think it's NFL.com, but there are a number of different services that after the draft have already given their most stacked rosters, right? Or their best overall rosters. A couple of them have the Saints at number one. And if you have the best roster in the NFL, then who the hell cares if it's better than the one you had last year? I just wonder if they have the right complementary pieces in comparison to last year. I'm mainly thinking Ingram there. And I also wonder a little bit if Breeze is going to be able to sustain excellence. They were so good through the first 8 or 9 games last year, and there was a noticeable drop-off after that. Are they going to be the team last year that started off with their hair on fire? Or are they going to be the one that came back down to earth a little bit? I'm having a difficult time with this. They have an elite roster. I just don't know if it's better than the one last year. I'll ask you now. Out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Lonnie, you're up first.
Hello, this is Bobby. How you doing?
All right, Clint, maybe got your name wrong, but are they better this year than last year?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of your points. I think the absence of Mark Ingram, that 1-2 power punch, is going to come back to haunt the Saints, just like you said. It's going to be, amaze me if Drew Brees can get through another season unhurt. And I think those two factors are going to be the main reasons why I don't think they're going to be as good as they were last year. Now, if all of that comes together, well, I think they're in line for another Super Bowl run. But I don't think that can happen. Okay.
Thanks. You got it. I appreciate the call. And, again, it sounds like what you're alluding to is you see ifs, whether or not those ifs can be turned into wills or are, that's yet to be seen. And that's the conversation this time of year. That's exactly the exercise we're going through. Still got a lot of great feedback on Facebook especially. I'll share that with you in a moment. But right now we're heading back out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Frank, great to have you post-draft. How are you, my man?
This question is kind of like a double-edged sword because it's, I mean, this McCoy guy, and when you lose Max Unger, that is tremendous. That he was, to me, he's hands down the number one center in the league. Then the loss of Ingram, wow, that puts incredible pressure on Alvin Kamara. I'm not really trusting the running back they picked up. I'm going to have to sink on this one because I think they were better last year.
And you know what's interesting? I'll see if you agree with me here. They may not be as well positioned as they were last year, but they still could advance farther this year.
Well, this goes back to what you and I talked about at the end of last season. It all depends on the Zebras.
The Zebras, and then I think a little bit of defense as well. I'll explain what I mean in a minute. Frank, you know I appreciate you.
Too easy, Ben.
Just absolute stealing there. We got time for more. 706-0111. I get the Zebras point. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. We all watch the Rams-Saints game. We get it. Defensively, you didn't hear me say a word about that in my answer yet. All I told you is that I think they have a chance to watch number 13 progress this year. I think that Jared Cook will take some pressure off him. But I need to see if Cook can be the offensive equivalent of what Demario Davis was as an acquisition last year. I need to see if Kamara can take a step forward without Ingram. I need to see if Breeze can sustain health. I didn't say a word about defense. Now I will, and then we'll take a call. I think they can be better on defense this year. I know they had moments last year toward the end of the regular season, in spots during the quick playoff run. I know they had a bye. I think their defense could be better this year. I am a huge proponent of the Malcolm Brown ad. Huge. If, again, every team in the NFL is playing the if game right now. The Saints don't have exclusive rights to it. But on the defensive side, if Marcus Davenport progresses, stays healthy, I mean, if they're a better defense, that trickles down to everything else they do from a holistic team standpoint. So even if some of the offensive ifs don't happen, defensively, if they're consistently better, if they're holding down the fort and then Sheldon Rankins returns, they're going to be trouble for people. All right, back to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Dusty, thank you for waiting on me. What do you think?
What's happening, brother love? Listen, I'm swimming, but man, water's getting in my mouth, and I'm fighting fair with this one, bro, because Alvin Kamara, there was a noticeable drop-off from last year before and the year before that, and it's a hell of a thing when you got so much with him without Ingram, it's going to be a hell of a thing to see him being the man by himself. If I don't know. But with our defense and our offensive line better, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah, and look, I appreciate the call, Dusty. It's good to hear from you, man. And, like, I know they're going to be awfully good this year. I think we all do. Setting the bar where they did last year doesn't leave a lot of room to hop over it in the regular season, but I think it's all about gearing up toward the postseason. So if you could stay healthy at certain positions, if, as I just suggested, you stay right in the front seven and Sheldon Rankins comes back, I mean, we're going to find out. The guy, Gardner Johnson out of Florida, if he bolsters the secondary as well. So, again, they had two straight draft classes that were almost infallible. When you look at 2017 and then 2016, right? Am I doing my math right? Yeah. 2018's draft class, hey, it wasn't half bad. They had some guys that contributed right away, but it wasn't to the same caliber. It didn't deliver Michael Thomas, didn't deliver Marshawn Lattimore, Alvin Kamara, Ryan Ramczyk. I mean, they were freaking nails on two straight drafts. Last year, slight drop-off, but they're human. It happens. That'll be part of this equation as well. We don't yet know. All we can do is think, and the word Dusty just used, hope, that Eric McCoy at center, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson at safety are about it. if they get one player out of those two for year one, they got a chance to have a pretty darn good draft class. If both of those guys hit, even if they get 80% of what they got that year out of, what, who was it, Kamara and Lattimore? Again, Katie barred the door. So there are a lot of different variables you could throw into this equation, and it's going to be intriguing to figure out which guys hit, where they stay healthy, but a lot of it comes back to Breeze as well. And as we head toward our final break of the hour, some of our response on Facebook suggests it exactly that. Again, your sink or swim question of the day: are the Saints better positioned to win the Super Bowl this season than last? Tim on Facebook, they are, but they won't again. Laugh out loud. Brian, two answers from Brian. I'll conjoin them. No, they have lost too much leadership and consistency in play. Still have a great team, but not as far along as 2018. Losing Ingram and Watson will hurt the leadership and team swagger it had previously. Christian, no. They should have gone after an under 32 quarterback. Trade Breeze. He is 5 years past his prime. Just making friends and influencing people, Christian. And Robert has a picture of a dog that is clearly treading water, and the meme says, let's go swimming. That's about all I can say to that, Forrest Gump style. Final break, then we're coming back in. Want some more of your phone calls? 706-0111. Get your Saint shots in while you can. We got Shea Dixon, 505 till 530. Going to be LSU Cruton heavy. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and yeah, we will. BRB. Be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Are they better than last year? Well, hell, are they better than the rest of the league? Maybe that's all that really matters. Let's keep asking and answering both questions. Bumper to Bumper Sports back in. Final time for hour number one on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And my man is just itching for your next phone call. 706-0111. Are the Saints better positioned to win the Super Bowl this season than last? That's the question at hand. Clint, I gave the Facebook response. How about our tweeps?
The Twitter people, I think your theory about Lafayette, Louisiana being a Facebook town, definitely think that's an agreeance here. Five votes.
Stop making up words. Hey. We'll say agreement on the show.
Okay. 80% go and swim here, Ben.
You know, along those lines, if I had to get message out to the general populace of Acadiana, yeah, and I weren't able to use this radio show, you better hope that I do it on Facebook. Because if there's imminent danger coming, like if I sense Thanos in our presence, that's the first of several Avengers references I'll make in this show. No in-game spoilers. Don't sweat it. I did see it Sunday, but I've got some commentary in my movie-going experience in the 5 o'clock hour. Hilarious. But you better hope that I go to Facebook with that information and not Twitter, because about a tenth of the amount of people would be saved with my life-threatening information if I dispatched it over Twitter, if I just decided to go on Facebook instead. All right, out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Jeffrey, are the Saints better positioned to win it this year than last?
Well, if you look at it this way, in my eyes, last year we won bad call away from going, so my answer is, yeah, I think we're in better position. We got younger players, to me. I mean, I know Ingram left. Everybody talks about Ingram leaving. But, I mean, you know, I think the running back we picked up will complement Kamara the same way Ingram did.
I think he can. And look, Latavius Murray has had flashes, especially 1 year, maybe two or three seasons ago in Oakland. Let's see if he's consistent. He won't be asked to be a workhorse, and that's a plus, Jeffrey.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? And I think with the center situation, Max Unger was slacking off a little bit towards the end of the year. So maybe with a younger center slash guard, I mean, we pull up right now with guards and centers, I think. And I think that position right there was filled. Tight end position with Cook. I mean, I'd say swim with it, man. I mean, you know, a younger team.
I like it.
And with a lot of veterans from last year combined, we stay healthy. We get the calls to go our way. I see us going to the Super Bowl.
With the weather outside, you hardly have to pump sunshine, but we're glad you did. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
I love it. We're going to take another one, but here's what I'll say before this next call. Where are the Saints more questionable than they were last year? First and foremost, I would say offensive line. Sorry, it's just a fact. When you lose Max Unger, it's a contract year, but still you're not sure what you want to do with Andrus Peat, the injury-plagued riddle that continues to be Teron Armstead. I just think there's more of a question mark at O-line than what was a strength on the team and one of the best in the NFL for the first 8 or 9 games of last year. So they're probably more questionable on the O-line. I think they're more solidified on the D-line. So that's part of the irony to me. I know they lost Alex Okafor. He was a nice bedrock piece. But he also, if you look at it this way, I'll use one of Jeffrey's phrases. It depends on how you look at it. If you look at it this way, Alex Okafor was also a stopgap to get to Marcus Davenport. Now the young man just needs to develop. But with Malcolm Brown, some of the things they did on the D-line, they could get better there this year. I mean, seriously. All right, let's get back to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Ivan, thank you for waiting. How do you feel about this?
I feel like the defense is going to be better this year. With that younger player opposite Cam Jordan, Davenport, they're going to get to the other quarterback. They're going to get to the other team quarterback. And I think that Tre'Quan Smith is going he's going to have a big year this year.
I want to speak to that last point because it's a really well-made one. And stick with me because I'll get your reaction to this. The fact that they didn't take a receiver in this draft, that speaks volumes to what they expect from Tre'Quan Smith. You could say maybe even Cam Meredith, Ivan.
Yeah. I think Cameron Meredith, if he get healthy, and then they got that tight end too, that tight end they picked up, they're going to be better.
I like
it. They're going to be a whole lot better. We were one play away. One play away from the Super Bowl. And you know New Orleans would have scored more than 3 points.
Oh, there's no question. Ivan, I appreciate the call. Clint, before we hit the final word, the conviction in that man's voice, I felt that. It was almost Herm Edwards' play to win the game.
It really kind of was. Like just the
conviction. I'm kind of fired up right now.
And also just the whole this whole cadence to it as well was very Herm Edwards-esque.
One play away.
To win the game.
Play to win the game.
Hello.
I'm going through a brick wall for Ivan. Like right the bleep now. Okay, no, actually, right now we're going to get to one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Safe. LSU baseball does not play a midweek game this week. Paul Maneri's job must be safe. My eardrums must be safe. All of our conversations in the sports bar, metaphorically and actually, must be safe. We don't have to worry about what happens in a relatively trivial midweek game. And for that, we should all be grateful. But what we definitely are is safe. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. They're your final stop to fill the stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. They've got your non-ethanol gas. They've got your fresh, hot meals made ready to go. Nobody wants to cook tonight? No problem. Stop into the Village Station, whether you're going down south toward Moe, Abbeville, or you're coming back up to the Hub City, it's the Village Station. Maurice Avenue, right next door to the Dollar General. We're just about halfway home ourselves. Shay Dixon, after 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to lasso him down. And he's got one heck of a story to tell you. Trust me on this at 5:05. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming back in quickly on 103.7 The Game.
Our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB,
Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Up until 6:05, we got about one more hour to explore the space with you. We'll be here from inside the 237 Roof Studios. Don't forget, there's no job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. Shay Dixon, go247.com. He'll be with us in almost exactly 90 seconds. He's powdering off. He'll be ready. And we're going deep on recruiting, so make sure you buckle up for that. We had such an outstanding call. Really just a soundbite from hour number one that I got to run it back for our 5 o'clock hour peeps that are just trickling into their vehicles. We asked the question, sink or swim, are the Saints better positioned to win the Super Bowl this season than last? Took 5 calls, and I'm not sure that anybody crushed it as much as Ivan did. He remembers the end of last season.
We were one play away from the Super Bowl.
And he's absolutely right. We've had a lot of great response so far on the Ardco Equipment Hotline, sort of on Twitter, definitely on Facebook. People are pretty jacked up after the Saints draft effort. I think they've got a surefire starter, if healthy, with Eric McCoy at center. If he doesn't start, then they're in some trouble. If Nick Easton's the guy, they're in some trouble. I think they know their scouting. We should trust their scouting. I think McCoy is going to be the guy. That said, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson at safety coming out of Florida, it's not as big a position to need, but they've got a guy that could be a subset package demon. He may end up being more impactful than McCoy, at least in year one. Von Bell, some of the others, Patrick Robinson, they need to be quivering in their boots a little bit. Iron sharpens iron, and the Saints have some more guys who could compete, get after it. And this one out of Florida, forget about the jorts wearing. He's just versatile. And that's something that'll fit the Saints quite nicely. Thank you very much. Speaking of what fits nicely, how about Ed Orgeron and the recruiting footprint for LSU football?
Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out.
It's time for Shay Dixon of Go247.
You better believe he's back. And I'm excited that we get to start on a bit of a different note. So as we welcome Shay D back into B2BS, we got to tell the people. You were in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic last week, so we chopped it up with your guy Billy Embody. But the more interesting part is that you were not only in Punta Cana, but you were there. Well, I'll let you tell the folks. You were chaperoning what exactly, Shay?
My nephew's senior high school trip, which sounds ridiculous because it is. Not me chaperoning it, but them even going, because I don't know if I even had a senior trip, and we were probably lucky if my parents let us go to, like, Gulf Shores. So, yes, but I was in the Dominican Republic chaperoning a senior trip.
Local good influence, Shay Dixon. All right, so on that note, before we dive right into the deep end with recruiting, and there's a lot to get to there, I want to know on a scale of 1 to 10, you told me off the air that these kids always refer to themselves as thriving. So when they were at the blackjack tables, when they were imbibing legally, I mean, 1 to 10, what kind of thriving were they doing in Punta Cana?
Well, yeah, I should mention that at 18 in the Dominican Republic, which is why they went, you can legally drink and gamble, and they had a casino on site. So I will say that it didn't appear to be their first time in that sort of setting. There were probably about 50, 60 kids there, to give you a grip on it. They were on a 10 thriving. I'll say this. Whoever has kids out there in the high school range right now gets me. These kids are nothing like when we grew up. Really, any generation here listening that's 30 and above, these 18-year-olds are nothing like that. They're scandalous. Everything's on Snapchat or being recorded. I don't see how they get away with anything. They might not. They might just always be grounded. But these kids were not grounded this weekend. They were all the way turned up. Even the guys out here who are listening, or the ladies, from Lafayette and said, man, I did it big in high school. You didn't. Not compared to these kids. So they partied hard. I couldn't hang. I'll give myself like a 5 in large part because I kind of wanted to be a chaperone. I was still worried about ultimately what could happen if something goes wrong. But these kids pushed 10 and 11 and above across the board. It was impressive. I would be so scared if I had an 18-year-old.
It's like the best conversation we've ever had on the program. So these kids were minimum 10 out of 10 thriving. You give yourself a 5 out of 10, but because you were in a chaperone capacity, so that I can get a full mental picture, how many chaperones were lording over or maybe trying to shepherd in these 50 to 60 18-year-olds?
I think that, well, you can do the math. Every 3 kids had a chaperone, and you went to a better college than I, so you can do the simple math there.
How did they get away with anything? Y'all had like, you had 20 chaperones for like 60 kids? How did they get away with Jack?
I would say that 14 to 15 of the chaperones probably needed a chaperone.
Oh, my God. I don't know how to segue that into recruiting, but we're going to. All right, Shay Dixon, go 24-7.
Some other 18-year-olds. Here, transfer. Just go to the other one.
Let's talk some other 17-year-olds real quick. All right, we got to go to LSU's suddenly celebrated 2020 class. It was already damn strong, but it's gotten even better. And a lot of people excited about one that popped this weekend. Number 2 inside linebacker in the country, Antoine Sampa from Woodbridge, Virginia. Tell us about the young man and which recruiter at LSU really deserves some love for this one.
This is all Dave Aranda. And this played out as somewhat of a surprise, I would say. To me, certainly, to most. I would say it was even a surprise to some other people on the staff that Dave Aranda got this done. But Dave Aranda, the person, the one we've come to know, at least from a distance over the past 3 years, is a quiet one, and I mentioned a distance because he keeps to himself. You don't hear a ton from him other than the production you're seeing on the field, right? And recruiting's no different. So he was working on Sampa for the better part, well, since he was a freshman, so the better part of 2.5 years, and kind of quietly chipping away, and he got him to campus this spring. That visit went well, and Sampa said then, which in hindsight kind of tipped us off, but that LSU, yeah, he was into him when Aranda was recruiting him. He knew all about LSU, but it wasn't until he visited and got around the team and got around the facilities and the other coaches and then got a sense for what LSU really offered. And I think he vibed well with it. And that ultimately led to, like I said, a bit of a shocker of a commit. Not so much that he chose LSU, but the timing of it, when it happened, just sort of, hey, boom, in about 30 minutes, I'm letting the world know where I'm going. He dials up Aranda, says it's a done deal, lets Coach O know, and he's in the boat. So it was an impressive job, and you're talking about a pure middle linebacker, a thumper on film. He's a junior in high school, and he's already 6'2.5", 220. So a prototypical guy that Dave Aranda likes in the middle of his defense, and another top 50 prospect into LSU's class, and that's 5 top 50 prospects. We haven't seen him recruiting at this clip really in some time.
Hey, you're jumping the gun because I'm going to ask you that question momentarily. Shay Dixon, our guest, LSU, the number one class in the country currently. And part of the, I guess, wall, if you will, another brick in the wall, was Rakeem Jarrett, number 3 wideout in America from the D.C. area. Again, this happened a little more than a couple days ago, but it's since the last time we spoke. So your evaluation of him, just this studly receiving core that they're building, give me the lowdown on all of it.
Well, we know a guy from the listening area, Kayshawn Boutte, who's sort of the third piece to their group, is the fat. He has the third fastest, or had it back in March when he ran it, third fastest 200-meter time in the country. So you've got a burner already, right? Well, Rakeem Jarrett is that, too. The first thing that jumps out is his speed. He's got good size. He's got a nice frame. He's 6'190" as a junior in high school. So by no means small, but he'll fill out. He'll grow a bit more. I think you see him as a guy who could play inside out. On 24/7, if you go to his profile, we always comp sort of these top 150 guys to what we see them being at the next level. And he got a comp to Stephon Diggs just in terms of how he has both elite speed, but also is really good route runner, tough to get your hands on him if you're a defender. And he's shown on film big playability. So this was a big pickup for them, a 5-star. And really, this was a top-to-bottom recruiting effort because a number of guys on their staff, we've seen them hire, whether it be in the personnel department or analysts. But when those guys get on campus, obviously, they're around and can help recruit. But the personnel department is the one who sort of first makes contact. and reaches out to the guys and then sort of passes them on to the position coaches. And a member of their personnel department, Colin D'Angelo, is the guy that Jared has talked up as being the main reason he really got into LSU. So we're seeing Ed Orgeron really do something with a complete staff effort all over the country. And he said on signing day, look, he bragged about spending, or at least boasted about, hey, I was in Washington, D.C. for almost a week hitting all these different high schools. And even then it sounded, oh, well, you know, that sounds cool. You're making it into a national brand, but what's going to happen from it? And now they've got D.C., the second best player in Washington, D.C., committed in Jarrett. You've got Samp out of Virginia, who's 20 miles away. You've got DeMond Clowney out of Baltimore, which is obviously right there in the area. So those visits paid off, and we're seeing them do something, as I said, we haven't seen them do in a while.
More impressive for me, Shay, than what's going on the East Coast, which is pretty darn good in its own light, is what you first foretold on this program maybe 2-3 months ago, and it's everything with California. It's incredible. Again, you bopped us over the head with it and said they've got connections, right? Ed Orgeron, Tommy Robinson, James Craig. Tell us about the young guy they added. I say young because I remember him playing at Southern Cal, but Konecki Udazi, you could pronounce it better if I just messed it up, and tell us about what he might continue to add to a staff that is absolutely murdering the state of California.
Well, he gives you more guys who can pick up the phone and make some calls for you. And you mentioned the guys who were previously on staff out there. Aranda's been on, you know, in college in California, whether playing or coaching. We know that a guy like Bill Bush has spent a lot of time in Arizona, Utah, now in California recruiting. So when you get, and I'm probably leaving some people off, when you're getting into 7 or 8 people on your staff, have some legitimate connections to high schools and, you know, trainers or whatever it might be that helps you out. And then you throw in that USC and UCLA weren't good last year. We'll see. That'll be the sort of caveat here. Is USC going to be good in time for them to salvage LSU pillaging? Pretty much every kid out there that people thought were going to go to USC are now going to LSU, Washington. Some other schools are looked at. A number of kids are uncommitted. But you get my point. Stanford, we'll see if USC rises. But if they don't, these hires that Orgeron continues to make are going to pay dividends. They've got 3 committed now. They had 4 out of California. Jaden Everett flipped to Oregon. But I'm not going to be surprised if they get back to 4 and even get to as many as 5 guys out of the 25 that they'll sign coming from California.
All right, let's go big picture. I got 2 to end this segment. First off, you alluded earlier, this is as strong an effort as you can recall in a while. I'll put you on the spot. How long of a while? Do you recall covering an LSU recruiting effort that was this all-encompassing, this elite? How would you react to that?
Well, I mean, it's the best we've – I think it's the best we've seen probably in, gosh, since before Les Miles ever gotten into any hot water, really. You know, I mean, they – I think what year was the FAM class? Was that 2012?
2011, 11? Maybe?
That was 2011 because – 2012, I think they finished outside the top 10, but 2011 was the FAM class. But even then, we long-term understood the value of that class. They were ranked number 8, but they had Lael Collins, Jarvis Landry, Mettenberger, Odell, a lot of guys that Trey Turner is a Pro Bowler in that class, went on to do big things. And some of the top-heavy guys didn't, you know, Anthony Johnson, Jamari Orasco, you know, Kenny Hilliard never really emerged like people thought he would. But I think people always jump back to then, and there's been good classes in there, but what they're doing right now, and if you were to keep this class together right now and finish it, it would have been the number 14 class in the country last year. They have 14 commits right now. So you get to add 11 more. Imagine how much you're climbing then. I mean, it is a no doubt top 1, 2, 3 class, and I'll put you into perspective because my answer would be, Ben, I don't know. I mean, more than 10 years, a while, and we're only halfway through, right? If they can continue this pace, it'll be the best that we've seen maybe in the modern era of sort of internet recruiting. But that's sort of the cliff that they're recruiting on. And if you want to be Bama, I've said this, look, Bama and Clemson are the teams that jump to mind when you talk about the emergence of the college football playoffs, right? They've been there, they've won. They're the teams that you've got to knock off. Well, they also recruit really well. Like, they're always up there in the conversation, best classes. Then they send the most guys to the NFL with LSU. Well, if you want to compete on that level, you've got to be in this mix. And Bama, LSU's got the number one class, Bama 2, Clemson 3. Clemson's class will be the best class they've ever signed. Bama's always getting number one classes, and you've got LSU out here threatening them. And I think in the point system, Ben, they're all sitting around 250 points. Nobody else has more than 200. So it's a blowout race, and if you're LSU, you've got to feel great about the reality that, hey, if it's a blowout race, we want to be in there with the teams like Alabama and Clemson, who are the teams we're looking to knock off.
All right, don't have time for an explanation, just a position. Out of these 14 commits, they've stockpiled at a number of different places. Where's the one area where they still have to roll going forward, where they maybe have to make up some ground?
O-line. It doesn't even need an explanation. You've got to do it every year, and they've only got, you know, one, maybe two guys you can like committed right now. So that will be a focus going forward.
Shea Dixon, go247.com, and he puts it out there as quickly as you need it. We'll be right back. Time for Shea's questions. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
We're going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
We're going to do things different.
Can we be just like we
flip the script.
I flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shea Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know I'll flip.
The introduction from Coach O. Right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. It is the flip the script portion of the show. That means it's time for Shea Dixon to grab the mic. What you got for me?
Well, everyone talked NFL drafts, so we're in the business, right? Recruiting, we're always looking forward. I'm looking into 2020 NFL draft, and we'll stick with LSU. But when you think of guys on this team who are going to be going into the NFL draft, I think probably a handful jump to mind. CBS Sports put out a breakdown of by Chris Trapasso of his top 50 players that he felt were going to come out next year's NFL draft. Three LSU guys on it: Christian Fulton, Grant Delpit, Michael Divinity. And I say them in that order because that's the order he put them in. And he had Christian Fulton, the number two corner, number 11 overall prospect, Delpit, number one safety, number 17 overall prospect, and then Divinity falling into the top 50. So before we dive into any debate here, your immediate reaction to hearing someone say, I may have Christian Fulton ahead of Grant Delpit.
He's trying a little too hard. He might even be trying to go the contrarian route. I just don't see it that way. And when I say you're trying too hard, don't take surefire blue chip guys and underestimate them to maybe try and prop some others up. That said, I believe Christian Fulton can be a first round draft pick. If he goes in the first half of the first round, right, first 15, 16 picks, he'll have had one heck of a senior season. He's still got more to put on film, in my opinion. I know he's got the measurables. I know he'll do great at combine, underwear Olympics, pro day type settings, but you can't underestimate what Grant Delpit already has on film, who he is. If Jamal Adams is a top 10 draft pick, Grant Delpit is a top 5 draft pick. He's absolutely incredible to me. He's like Jamal, except bigger and rangier. I don't know how you kind of knock him down the ladder a little bit. And again, they don't play the same position. For what it's worth, Trapasso has Delpit as the number one safety off the board. But to say that he lags behind Fulton in where they're going to be drafted, again, you're doing too much. You're trying a little bit too hard. Take the low-hanging fruit when it's given to you. I think an uninjured Grant Delpit is a surefire top 7 to 10 pick this year. I don't feel that way particularly about Christian Fulton. Now, I think that Michael Divinity as the number 47 overall player on Trapasso's big board, hey, that's not bad. And this is somebody who's got an opportunity to move into a bigger light with a couple of guys getting out of the way from last year's senior class. Suddenly, Divinity, a senior, can maybe make that leap like Debo Jones did, like so many others ahead of him have, and continue to make an impact at the next level. So I like that a lot for Divinity back into the top 50. But I think definitively, having Fulton ahead of Delpit, you're trying a little too hard there.
What is your immediate just gut reaction when you know it's Tua, it's Justin Herbert from Oregon, the quarterback, Jerry Jeudy will come out from Bama, Andrew Thomas, offensive tackle at Georgia, will probably be the first guy. There's some edge rushers in there. You knew Adams went six. You knew that that we just saw Devin White go five. What number jumps out? If you're saying top 10 pick, where are you throwing Delpit in that mix? Kind of just knowing a year out the caliber of guys that'll be up there.
Seven, right? You know, I mean, the guys that you mentioned at quarterback, people will leap up to take them. Somebody probably will go get an offensive tackle. You can understand where maybe an edge rusher or cornerback goes before him. But, I mean, Grant Delpit's a freak. And the way the NFL's going right now, if you can cover and you can lay the lumber, if you can play in the box and you can move back, imagine if you had an idea what type of player the Honey Badger was going to be. He had none of the off-the-field problems he did at LSU. The guy would have been a top 10 or 15 pick. Again, Jamal Adams was, what, the number 6 overall pick. Delpit, to me, feels about like 7. If it wasn't as quarterback dominant of a class as we know it's going to be, I might say 4 or 5.
Is he missing anyone? Does anyone belong on this list?
I don't think that Joe Burrow belongs in the top 50, but depending on the type of year he has, he'd be a nice flyer in the mid to late rounds. I also don't think people should forget about Kalyvon Chaisson, because if he returns to form, if he showcases the speed and he's back from the injury, it'll be him, not Divinity, that's knocking on the round of mid to late second round, right? So I don't think you should forget about Kalyvon.
Boy, I think Caleb, you're right. And I think he might go higher than that. If he looks like he was supposed to look before he got injured and test well and everything, he's got first-round pick material.
He does. If he's not showing any worse of the wear, yeah, you're right. I might have undersold it a little bit. Shea, this was fun. Go to your next chaperoning trip. We'll talk in a month.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
He's the man. And he is Shea Dixon. Go247.com. React to anything, everything you just heard on the other side. Just call 706-0111. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports. And we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
You bet your backside that we're in the end game. Now, I'm not spoiling anything. I don't want somebody punching me in the face. Inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. But I will tell a story of my encounters at the Avengers Endgame on Sunday. Hilarious, at least to me, not for some of the patrons I saw going into the movie theater, or at least trying to. All right, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, back in on 103.7 The Game. I'll get to the shade, I'll get to my Endgame story here in a moment. Clint, I'm afraid that some people think that we may have taken the lead and then buried it a little. Because I had Shea on for the better part of a half hour there. And yes, we talked a lot of recruiting. Yes, we talked about LSU players, where they might fit into the 2020 draft. But we had an outcry. Texters, people sliding into the DMs. Kind of gross, frankly. But people that wanted to know more about Shea in Punta Cana. And so for those that may have missed it, for those that just enjoyed it, and you also have to get a redux, these are my two favorite clips. One of them with a little more duration than the other. Not going to fit the double entendre phrase you thought I was in there, right? A little more duration. But Shea said that thank the big guy upstairs that he doesn't have an 18-year-old kid in this day and age.
But these kids push 10 and 11 and above across the board. It was impressive. I would be so scared if I had an 18-year-old.
That just slays me. And again, you're joining us. Shea hadn't been with us for a little while because he chaperoned. He was like a sheep and a goat herder, frankly. A bunch of 18-year-olds that were legally able to drink in Punta Cana on a senior trip. And gamble, for what it's worth. Now, there's a little more duration to this clip. And at the end of it, he says something that slays me. This is the ultimate weird flex. If you think you partied when you were in high school, Shay's here to tell you that compared to these kids, you did not.
Whoever has kids out there in the high school range right now gets me. These kids are nothing like when we grew up. Really, any generation here listening that's 30 and above, these 18-year-olds are nothing like that. They're scandalous. Everything's on Snapchat or being recorded. I don't see how they get away with anything. They might not. They might just always be grounded. But these kids were not grounded this weekend. They were all the way turned up. Even for some, even the guys out here who are listening, or the ladies, from Lafayette and said, man, I did it big in high school. You didn't. Not compared to these kids.
Slays me. Every part of that. And Clint's been losing his mind since he first heard it. Before we got the text saying, please run some of that back. Before the DMs, Clint said, the eternally grounded. That reminded you of Butters from South
Park. How can it not remind you? It's like, maybe they're just always grounded. Like, but I was surprised our guy Shay didn't drop that reference in there.
Unbelievable. And I didn't know exactly what stories we would pull out of him. I didn't want him to throw any kids under the bus there.
I don't think he would have.
But the fact that, and I'll give you my quick reaction, then I got to throw shade here. I'm running out of time. We got Sharif Fyshak coming aboard in about 10 minutes to talk Saints draft. Could you imagine 20 chaperones for 60 kids in a foreign country? But then Shay's point was well taken. About 14 or 15 of those chaperones needed chaperones. I needed Shay to tell those stories on this program today. All right, time for your daily reminder. Don't have kids. No, I'm just kidding. Your daily reminder. No one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. Alex will be the one to put up your shades and awnings while Todd takes care of the installation of your patio covers and those gorgeous customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019. All it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
If you didn't come correct for your trip, your planning to the Avengers Endgame, then shame on you and shade at you. And I'm not talking about dressing up like Thanos. I'm not talking about getting in some kind of weird cosplay. I don't play those games. I'm a grown man. That means that I plan, okay? I'm here to tell you that I went to the 11 a.m. showing at the Grand by Corner Bar perfectly timed. I mean, the perfect storm of relative inactivity when otherwise the place would have been absolutely flooded, and it was all weekend long. I drove by it Saturday morning. Everybody that usually is at the farmer's market, boom, they're at Endgame. Everybody that would usually be anywhere, boom, was at Endgame. The traffic, the lines, trying to get in, tremendous. And so I said, we're going to make sure that this doesn't happen to us. Clint, what happens at 11 a.m. on a Sunday? First of all, people go to?
Church.
Second of all, this weekend, people go to?
Festival.
Third of all, Ben goes to the end game.
Yes.
And I slid right in there, dude. I was in the theater at 10:30, perfect seats. I saved four for people who are coming to join
me.
I mean, I'm talking like.
You nailed it.
I'm talking fist fights. If you try to come and take one of my other four seats, I was ready to roll. Perfect seating. Now, here's where the shade comes in. So it's a 3-hour movie.
Yep.
Started at 11. What time did I get out?
Let's say like 3:30, because you never, you know, you got like these 15-minute like features.
You mean 2:30?
Yes.
Nonetheless, this is not a math course.
I was told there'd be none.
This was supposed to be participatory. Now it's not. At 2:15-ish, roughly, I'm leaving the theater. I'm here to tell you that there were a group of people that were sectioned off, like behind that tape where you're not supposed to go on the other side of it.
Yeah.
There were some fuming dads. There were some fuming, like, uncles. There were some little siblings that weren't thrilled. Clearly that they were so far at capacity. There were people that didn't plan well enough. They didn't buy their tickets in advance. They didn't get there early enough. They didn't deserve the end game, okay? They didn't deserve good seating. They deserved what they got. And I absolutely was sustained by the amount of just abject horror that was on the faces of some of these people. You could tell their movie was about to start, and they were being herded like cattle. It was amazing. I haven't seen anything like that at the movie theater in a long, long time. But the surge of churchgoers, they were out.
Yeah.
People that had went to festival, what time does it end on Sunday? Like 2 or 3 p.m.?
Actually, around 7 the last back.
Oh, I don't, not on Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday.
Oh, I thought it cut off early on Sunday.
Like most of the stages will shut down, but the big one is like around like 5, 6 o'clock.
All right, fair enough.
Because I know a good friend of ours wound up seeing Robert Randolph as like the last act.
That's legit. Okay. Yeah. So shade at me. I didn't know about some of that. But the floodgates had opened at the Grand at the time that I was going in, and these people weren't prepared for it. It's like, again, a second South Park reference in one segment. Clint, if you pizza when you're supposed to French fry, you're going to have a bad time. There were some people having a really bad time that just wanted to go see their favorite movie, and it was hilarious.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
YP, you people out there in Cinemaland, you didn't deserve the end game. Pretty good movie, by the way. No spoilers here. Just more B2BS.
Thank
we'll
you.
Finish up on the other side with Sharif Fyshak. Hey, Clint, guess who dies?
Shut up.
I'll tell you in the break. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
All right, back in. Time to finish on a high note. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben and Clint taking you home on your Tuesday afternoon on 103.7 The Game. And out we go, second time in 2 hours to New Orleans. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, time to hook up with our guy Sharif Fyshak. Does a great job with WDSU-TV in the Big Easy. How are you, Sharif?
Good, Ben. How are you?
I'm okay. How was your NFL draft experience?
Splendid. Not many picks. The way I like it, beautiful.
All right, I'm going to get you to go with what you wanted and then maybe what you didn't want and what came to fruition. Let's start on the plus side of things. One thing that you absolutely wanted in this draft, whether it was a position, the idea of a trade-up, something that you thought, you know what, this has to happen, and it did.
Trade-up go without saying under Mickey Loomis. I mean, you knew they were going to trade up. But, I mean, they didn't have any first-round pick at some point in time. They're not going to do that because they aren't going to wait until the 62nd overall pick to make one. But depth along the offensive line, specifically at center, and they addressed that with someone I think is possibly the top center in the draft. They've done a good job over the years of, you know, with their offensive line work, whether it's in free agency or in the draft. They've done a good job of developing their offensive linemen, and they've done their homework in that department, and I think Eric McCoy is a very good pickup for them. They got two very good picks. When they traded up to get Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, that was also another position of need. I said throughout the weeks, I was like, man, they only have really two true safeties right now, and they needed some depth behind Von Bell and Marcus Williams. So Kirk Coleman is gone. I mean, they needed someone back there to help those two guys out with some of the pressure, and I think he's a good pickup. Now he could also play some special teams, but he's a ball hawk. I mean, that's what they do. They find ball hawks and draft them. So I think that those two guys are sneaky good picks. And I think another sleeper is Alizé Mack. They needed to address some depth at that position. I mean, you go into this draft knowing that you're set without even making a pick. And a lot of people are like, oh, this draft was terrible. I'm like, the team is awesome. They don't really need many pieces. You're only drafting for depth and hoping that you hit on one or two of these guys. And I think Alizé Mack was another one of them. So I like those three guys a lot. I mean, the tight end is big. He's a big dude, and he can make some catches. And I think they've evaluated some tight ends in the past and done a solid job. So I can't say that they went wrong with any of those guys.
All right, Sharif, the other side of the coin, if you will, something that, again, you kind of thought, all right, this is what they should do, this is what I want to see happen, but they didn't do it.
I think maybe they could have gone after a pass rusher. They didn't, you know, maybe build some depth along the outside, the edge. They need to bring in somebody else. I mean, Trevor Rankin's 8 sacks are out of the window for at least the first four, maybe six games of the season. So I felt that was the one position of need that they could have gotten, to be honest with you. And that's possibly the only one I could think of. I really don't think they need a receiver. They have a million of them on the roster. You have to remember Cam Meredith wasn't 100%. Ked Ginn really came back late after an injury that sat him out for a while. I think that for the most part, they should be pretty good. I mean, Tre'Quan Smith comes back in his second season. I know people wanted another receiver, but I think that they're pretty set at that position considering the fact they added Jared Cook. I know he's a tight end, but I don't know much more they can add there. I mean, I think they have the pieces there to win a Super Bowl next year.
Talking with Sharif Ishak, WDSU-TV out of New Orleans. I'll get you to address their free agency crop. And if Demario Davis was really the shining star of last year's group, what do you think about this year? We know that at tight end they went out and got Jared Cook. I'm a huge proponent of Malcolm Brown on the defensive line. Could this be an even better free agency year than in 2018?
To be determined. I like what they did. They didn't really go get the splash free agents. They stopped doing that after, you know, failing on those several times when they had Jared Third and Brandon Browner and those crop of players. I think it's good. I don't know how good. I don't know if it's going to be as good as, you know, Demario Davis, but who says you need to have superstars, man? You just have to have the right players. I like what they did. They bring in Malik, they bring in Malcolm Brown. They didn't, you know, Watson retired for now, so they needed to add a tight end and make some plays. And Jared Cook has made plays for his career. So they are, you know, getting the right pieces, not necessarily the big splash pieces that some teams are making, because the Saints don't need to do that. They're under different philosophies now. They're under smarter and harder. Working smarter than harder. I mean, those players are going to work smart. And that's what I think they did this on the free agency class.
Sharif, how do the Saints and Sean Payton extend Drew Brees' shelf life within the season? How do they prevent him from kind of falling off the proverbial cliff a little bit with arm strength, with soreness, fatigue, whatever it is, and not just be excellent for the first 8 or 9 games of the year, but through the playoffs?
Jared Cook, Latavius Murray, players like that, Tennessee agency, Alvin Kamara, having a guy there for the entire season, hopefully not having to exhaust himself the first 4 games like he did a season ago, and Brees having to hum the ball 40 to 45 times a game. So I think Brees is probably going to work this offseason. And you know how he takes care of his body. I think he's going to find a way to make sure he's a 16-game player, not an 11-game player this season. I think he started to see that fall off after game 10, 11 of the season. So I think, you know, those players like that are going to help. And having a healthy core of receivers will work for him, will benefit him in the offense in the long run. I mean, Ted Ginn didn't play for most of the season. Cam Meredith didn't play for most of the season. Tre'Quan Smith was a rookie. He has to get adjusted. I mean, Michael Thomas can't do it all. Kamara can't do it all. And I think with the addition of Jared Cook and Latavius Murray, I think with Latavius Murray, by the way, can catch the ball out of the backfield. So a lot of those pieces, if healthy and clicking the right way, he's going to have a better season.
I'll get you out of here with a Pels-related question. Obviously, people seem pretty excited about David Griffin coming on. He went and got the lead trainer from the Phoenix Suns. He's trying to target some other maybe mid-level guys within the hierarchy of the organization. Is that generating any buzz around New Orleans? I mean, you got a feel for the city. Do people even care at this point that the Pels are trying to rebuild and maybe doing it right this time?
They absolutely care because they didn't stay par for course. You know, they didn't keep Danny Ferry. I think if they keep Danny Ferry, that's essentially you're doing this, what you've been doing, you know, just trying to have success by repeating yourself, and they didn't do that. They went out and, you know, gave the keys to David Griffin. I'm sure he bargained hard for a lot of things that he wants, and Gail Vincent probably told him, yeah, all right, let's do this. She's committed. She's been saying that since this whole Anthony Davis saga went down, Dell Demps was fired. She's committed to bringing a winning product to the city, and I think David Griffin is the first big step. A lot of people are wondering who his GM is going to be. That's all, you know, semantics, and it's just a name. Just look at who's in control of the franchise now, and that's David Griffin. He only answers to Gail Vincent. He doesn't have to answer to Mickey Loomis. He is the guy in charge of this franchise outside of Gail Vincent. So I think it's a great move. And then he adds his trainer, because you know how beat up and banged up this franchise has been over the last 4 or 5 years. You want to make sure you have the right medical staff, and to bring him in and his guys, I think they're taking the steps in the right direction, making all these small moves, which will be big down the road for the Pelicans. Now we'll see what happens with the Anthony Davis saga. We'll see if he can convince him to stay. It's going to be hard for me to think he's going to stay. And, you know, what picks they get back, what players they get back. Hopefully it's the Tatum, Smart, and a few picks from Boston or something as good as that, because they're going to have some picks in the draft that they're going to be able to build for the future. So I'd say the city's excited. They're really excited, Ben. I mean, there's nowhere to go but up. And I think David Griffin is the right guy. He's given him the keys to the very expensive billion-dollar car.
Sharif Ishak, WDSU-TV, from the Big Easy, laying down truths. I got to tell you, Sharif, as we part ways here, we put some speed on in front of you. A couple guys that get on base, Gus Kattengill, Shea Dixon. We needed power out of you today. Thank you for delivering.
I just put the ball in the gap, man. Hopefully they can score.
You the man, Sharif. Have a great night.
All right, you too.
That's the way you end the show. Sometimes we start with the guest. Today we get to end with one. You just heard me round out our guest list. I want to thank him again. Gus Kattengill, ESPN Radio, 100.3 FM in New Orleans, host of the Sports Hangover, and he gave us a dose of reality when it comes to exactly what Eric McCoy at center might mean for the Saints. Ditto for Chauncey Gardner-Johnson at safety, the players he might push there, and then why the Saints and New Orleans need to find a way to get the NFL draft down to the city. We appreciate Gus. Shea Dixon, about 25 minutes worth of the goods today. His trip to Punta Cana, the gift that keeps on giving for all of us. Mr. Chaperone, Shea Dixon, go247.com. Excellent, per the usual. And you just heard from Sharif Ishak, WDSU, in the Crescent City. Big Tuesday, about to give way to a big Wednesday. Oh, wait a minute. Clint reminds me. A world's shortest segment audition here coming up. Thank you, Astros. So we will be back. Just when you think you're done. Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be back in briefly on 103.7 The Game.